Good morning. Happy Friday to everyone. I am Samuel Trapp. This is Civic Outlaws that you are listening to. I'm very glad to have you. I'm wondering, hopefully, the sound is going to come out okay here today. If it's not, I think somebody should text me right away and let me know, because it appears to be okay. Appears to be excellent bars, and I wish to get started. But I'm remote today. I'm in sunny and very hot Florida, and I want to, finish what I'm doing here and get back. So I have some big news. It's going to be a pretty big show, I think. This is unbelievable here, in my own humble opinion. So I'm thinking that, well, I know what we're going to do. Here we are in Civic Outlaws. You know, we've had, what, four shows now? Yeah, I believe we've had four shows. And these four shows have each gone over one additional step. And I think that I want to kind of go back to the beginning, walk you through this entire process one more time. If you feel like calling in and interrupting me, please do, especially anybody involved in this story. You can call in at 573-746-8020. And assuming I can keep the technology working the way I want it to work, then I think we're going to be just fine. But as you know, over the last 4 weeks, I've walked you through Loper Bright. I've walked you through RSMO, Revised Statute of State of Missouri 536.140, and the changes that happened to that. And my continual fights and Civic Outlaws fights against government creep, government overreach. If you wish to find any of those prior articles, please do. They are out on our website, civicoutlaws.com. There's a bit of a process, what we've done so far, activity log, if you will. And now all of the prior podcasts are out there as well. You can go to civicoutlaws.com/podcast, and all the prior four, where the first one walked you Now we've been disconnected. That is great. Where's our connection? Damn radio is off the air. This is not good. Well, there it is. Now it's back. So I noticed a couple of seconds there of dead air, which I don't like, and I don't understand why it happened. Technology getting the best of us. And I'm hoping that doesn't continue, because I don't want this show in particular to be any sort of loss of content here. And so I apologize for that, but I will keep an eye on it. And if something happens, I will definitely reach back and try to connect. But it appears to be working. I hope the sound is coming through well. So I tell you what, tonight's story begins with a courtroom hearing on December 3rd. This topic tonight is, what we have a title for this, and we put it out on our web page. We put it out for our whole content, for the advertising of it all. And this is called I find this to be very intriguing, number one, and why these government creep, as I call it, or government creeps, as I call them, are are the background of Civic Outlaws. We're going to call this one 6 Days Later. We'll put a movie title in there for you. Sunshine Law and a Jefferson City Power Grab. Okay? So tonight's story begins with a simple question. What happens when a bureaucrat's authority is challenged in court? And less than a week later, discussions begin about expanding the authority that was being argued about in that court case through legislative means. That isn't coincidence. Maybe, maybe not, right? Could that possibly be a coincidence? But when these events occur only 6 days apart, the public has a right to ask what's happened in between. And the only answer, the only way to answer that question is through sunshine law requests, because government power should not grow in the dark. And I think it's important that it not grow in the dark, that it instead be completely transparent and open. That's the only thing we have going for us as citizens. Is that not correct? I think, the American system is built on a simple but powerful idea. No single branch of government is able to expand its own authority unchecked. The legislature writes the law, the executive branch enforces or carries out the law, and courts interpret the law. Each branch is supposed to restrain the others, the other two. But sometimes the real question is, what happens when those branches stop restraining each other and instead begin working in concert to expand their collective power? Because if an agency's authority is challenged in court, and days later, legislation appears expanding the same authority to what's being challenged in court, the public has a right to ask whether the system of checks and balances actually functions or not. I tell you what, I hope that it does. I have always questioned whether it does. You know me well enough. You know that I question these things pretty consistently. And so I think it's important to start with the story of that hearing, okay? And and I went through it, and you can go back and listen to any one of these topics. We only have an hour and maybe 10 minutes to get through all of this. So I want to make sure that we keep on moving, okay? And so the background, if you recall, is that there in February of this year, I started writing on behalf of Civic Outlaws. And Civic Outlaws formed in part because of these types of events, a series of articles that examined enforcement practices in the Missouri Alcohol and Tobacco Control Division. And those articles, which are all available at civicoutlaws.com, and you can hear the analysis of them in the prior four shows, and they raise several legal questions: whether certain conduct described in criminal statutes is being enforced through administrative order and agencies and equities. And I'll go a little bit into that because I have to set the stage properly. But if you read what I put out in any of those prior four articles, you will understand that the big fight was the fact that ATC and their own counsel admitted it in court on the third, and stated it with pride. He said, "We're not criminally enforcing anything," and he kind of said it with that emphasis. And the counsel for ATC was sitting right there next to him, and at the same counsel table. And she didn't participate in the hearing, but she was there, as were other ATC actors. And he made a point of saying, "Well, we're not enforcing these crimes. We're only enforcing them administratively, presuming that, well, it's okay if we enforce them administratively. I say that's not. We're only assigning administrative penalties. We're not arresting anybody. You know, so whether enforcement authority was being interpreted beyond the language of the statute is one of the issues in that very hearing. Whether administrative enforcement is being used where criminal prosecution would normally occur. These are not abstract legal questions. They go directly to the balance between regulatory authority and criminal enforcement. And I say, even go so far as to be critical to our system of checks and balances between executive, legislative, and judicial branches. Each one has to stay in their lane. I'm not positive that they are. In fact, I suspect that they may not be. So the questions at that hearing examined ATC enforcement authority, the legal arguments centered on the distinction between criminal enforcement and administrative licensing. Then let's talk about what happened next. Okay, there were 6 days. So this hearing occurred on December the 3rd. Okay, we start our organization. I can't remember. November 10 is when we started it, and I believe we got our 501c3, but we didn't plan to really get into it until after the first of the year. So after the first of the year, we were still building, getting a few things together, sending out sunshine requests and things like that. And it was my first article came out, February the 2nd. And in that article, it is the one I discussed this hearing in specific and talked about the specific issues going on in the at the ATC and in the government creep, in the creep, taking regulations that don't belong to you and importing them into your power. Now, I also questioned in these articles why licensing authorities, all they are licensing authorities, have police power. Why they have to be post-certified. Why they call themselves a police department. Why they start investigating. Why they're going undercover. Undercover as an alcohol tobacco licensing agent? These guys, they want nothing more than to be police officers. And they're not. They're just ATC. And I don't mean just. It's an important job. ATC agents. But it's more important to them to be able to arrest, carry guns. Why are we carrying guns? Nobody's asking the right questions, in my opinion. So we started asking some of these questions. Those prior four articles came up with that. Now, during that process, we came up with information related to, and we wrote specifically about, two particular House bills. And don't quote me on the numbers. I don't have them written here right in front of me. And I don't want to mess up anything that I'm doing. But I believe it's 3154 and 2379 or 78. I don't remember. But it's those two bills, and they may come up here in the discussion as we go. Those two bills were put upon by Representative Benny Cook, House bills, changes, 6 days after the December 3 hearing. Now, we didn't find out about this until this past week. I sent sunshine requests, went to Representative Cook's office, hoping to see him pick up the documents. He wasn't in. I left a check, and he emailed me the documents, responsive. And we got the same day, I believe, the records from ATC, because the communications were what we were after. Because after we saw the content of 3154, House Bill, and the companion bill, 2378, then we suspected. It's like, geez, that's kind of, the timing is kind of weird on that. And that's what Sunshine Law is about. Okay. But, you know, it's suspicious to think, oh, gee, maybe they, after this hearing, decided to contact their rep and see if they couldn't change some things around. And I'll let you decide whether you believe that or not. But we received records just recently, a couple of days ago, from Representative Cook's office. These records show discussions beginning on December the 9th between ATC, between Department of Public Safety liaison, legislative liaison, and it doesn't mean the case was actually filed that day. What it means is that the coordination was beginning then. And so that, you know, made me even more suspicious, because I'm just a suspicious sort of guy. And what it shows is that legislative action was being discussed less than a week after the hearing in Jefferson City, questioning the very authority that they were taking, and their own counsel said, well, yeah, but we're not enforcing it criminally. We're not enforcing criminal statutes criminally. We're enforcing them administratively. I'm paraphrasing, of course, but that's his argument, is, well, we're not arresting anybody. You know, well, guess what? Those bills sought to seek what? Arrest power. And rather than speculate about the timeline, I did, what anybody would do. Get the two requests. I submitted two, one to Alcohol Tobacco, one to Representative Benny Cook. And the request sought communications relating to proposed legislative changes affecting ATC enforcement authority, communications referencing the December 3rd hearing, communications between ATC personnel and Representative Cook's office after December the 3rd of 2025. And the goal was simple. If legislation discussions began shortly after the hearing, the documents would reveal that sequence of event. So I got ATC's response, 200 and some odd pages, and they responded to my request. The records they produced confirmed that communication existed regarding legislative discussions beginning on December the 3rd. Among those communications were references to discussions involving the Department of Public Safety and its legislative liaison, a girl named Jalen, or a woman, I don't know her, Jalen, I'll get her name here in a little bit. Among those communications, one referenced the political response to the legislation and noted that after my sharing of one of my articles, or two, which, by the way, were shared also with DPS by Representative Cook's office, noted that the bill was going to be, one of the bills was going to be withdrawn temporarily while public reaction was, it was calmed down, in the words. In other words, ATC's own records confirmed that legislative discussions were definitely underway. And those records form the backbone of this timeline. Now, I have another document in here, which I have to access because it is, that's interesting. You know, it's an analysis of all of these, all of the records that were provided. And I don't want to lose any connection that I have. And so I'm hoping that I can do this correctly, because my technology is not where it ought to be right now. But I want to make sure that I have this document pulled up appropriately. And in this document, it says, and this is from the ATC, it says that this Jalen is working with Representative Cook to create legislation. Now, that's a bother to me personally. Is it illegal? No. Is it corrupt? No. Is it anything? Well, not unlikely. Do I think it's not necessarily staying in your lane like you ought to? For me, it's too much. For you, maybe it is. I don't know. But either way, I don't like it. And this timeline shows, and here are some quotes for you. The quote says, where is she here? Oversight for the division. They were getting the division to give them exigent circumstances, arrest power. And here's the quote. Jalen said she's working with Representative Cook to get this introduced on the House side. This is the 9th. And then later, we got the agent authority. That means authority to arrest. Yay! We got the authority to arrest. Yay! This is great. Shows that ATC staff celebrated obtaining broader arrest authority. Shows that they're working together. Now, we discussed some of Representative Cook's background. He's law enforcement for, I think it was 19 years, for a good long time. And so later, he pulled the bill. Because according to this same person, Representative Cook has received quite a bit of backlash. Apparently my article, I don't know. And so we decided to pull the bill from committee and get this, wait for things to die down. So they're just waiting until we go away. They'll wait until nobody's looking, and they'll slide it through again, like they are with the 3154. This is nonsense, in my opinion. I think it ought to be even more, they're trying to get, right now, the quote is that ATC peace officers can make arrests and searches only for violations of liquor and tobacco laws. But this, they want to change it to arrest people for anything, as long as they say it's some kind of exigent circumstance. And I don't think that's good enough. Why in the world? Now, I don't understand why they need to arrest for violations of even that. There is no reason they can't call in someone with a badge, some local police officer. Anybody who would be arrested would be charged locally anyway, most likely. And if these guys are going to take their own authority, according to their own counsel, is we don't criminally enforce things. We only administratively, we take them to hearings that people get for their licensing. These are only licensing issues. Well, if they're only licensing issues, then why in the world do we have to arrest people? Why in the world do we have to expand discretion? Huge. Why in the world do we have to target particular people if we choose to? So why is an administrative agency broad discretionary authority, discretionary? Not across the board. We talked about those in a couple of our other articles, and I think you should go back and look at those too. So those are basically the background documents, ATC's own records that confirmed these legislative discussions were underway. Some 270 pages, something like that. So I shared with you last week what I was requesting from Representative Cook's office. I hadn't sent it yet, but I was sharing what I was intending to request. And the response from his office was quite a bit different than what we got from ATC. Instead of producing communications, he declined to provide any records. Very few. He provided two of my own articles back. Said, oh, gee, we got communications from this guy. And he sent me my own articles back, you know, made me pay for the research on civic outlaws sharing our thoughts on the bill. And he wanted to share that there was no cost, $0 to put 3154, or you know, he sent me some cost. I forget what the documents are called, but he sent a limited list, and his response did not include. Well, he declined to provide them, and he said, under 610, the Sunshine Request statute, that he was asserting attorney-client privilege. Attorney-client privilege. So, but the response didn't include any of the documents, or very few. And in fact, no, they're pretty separate. We're going to post them all later. But it doesn't include much, if any, of the records provided by ATC. And according to Sunshine Law, which arguably he helped he helped put into place, the responses, his responses did not include a list of documents that were being withheld, any sort of privilege log identifying those records, the identification of what attorney advice, or whose attorney, you know, who's the attorney, and what it, and his advice is being protected. If you have a bill that you wrote, and the bill is the bill, and you communicated with your the legislative council, and I assume there is one. In fact, I know there is, but they have counsel that that they have that you know, advise and say whether it's written correctly or whatever. Why didn't why I could understand that he didn't want to provide that. If there were inner discussions between him and legislative counsel, then then of course he shouldn't provide that. But he still has to identify the document that he's protecting and tell what it is, show that it exists, the date, who the parties are, you know, not and provide redacted portions. So he may have to provide, or does have to provide, under Missouri Sunshine Law, and I presume that he knows this, he has to provide the list of what the documents actually are. And he didn't do that. Didn't provide anything that would say what we can refer to. So Missouri Sunshine Law doesn't create attorney-client privilege. It just, and he cited the same, he cited Statute 610. And, you know, I'll be happy to be corrected if he says I'm wrong. I don't believe I am. In fact, I'm virtually certain that I'm correct. But if he does claim some sort of privilege exists, he has to outline what it is and the basis for it, and still provide redacted information that what communications are being withheld. They call it like a privilege log. So it's a log of documents that they're not going to provide, but they still have to say they exist. Okay. And on a side note, we got to go back to the structure of government itself. Okay. Because it presents another issue. Alcohol and tobacco control operates within the executive branch of government. The Missouri House of Representatives, back to your 10th grade, operates within the legislative branch, right? Attorneys representing an executive agency are not attorneys for a legislator. So let's say that Representative Cook was having a discussion with an attorney with the Alcohol Tobacco Control, specifically discussing language that they want. He's not, that's not protected. He's not a, that's not his lawyer. That's a girl or a guy, whoever, acting on behalf of their own organization. That's what they're doing. They're not that's not attorney-client privilege. Isn't created between them. They don't represent the legislative branch. They represent the ATC. So I hate to laugh about that, but attorneys, representative executive agencies, don't become attorneys for a legislator. So that means communications between an agency and a legislator wouldn't be protected. So it's a very straightforward question that I have. And I, of course, am going to send a follow-up Sunshine request outlining all this. I think that Representative Cook is doing his job. So first of all, I don't mean to beat up on him. I really don't. I think he's being used to do an end run around here if what I think happened actually happened. So who exactly is the attorney involved in this claim privilege? I'd like to know. And that question remains unanswered. There are three possible explanations, right? Explanation one, all of this is a coincidence, right? A hearing occurred on December the 3rd. Legislative discussions occurred days later. The two events are unrelated, and if that's true, communication would likely show it clearly. All right, explanation number two, legislative advocacy. After hearing its authority challenged, the agent, and this is what I think is more likely than the first one, is that the agency asked lawmakers to give them the authority. To grant them authority under the statute, to make sure that they don't have to worry about a ruling from a court that might not go in their favor. They knew what the argument was. They were there watching it. And this happens frequently in government. And if that's what occurred here, the communications should explain that process. So I don't understand why Representative Cook wouldn't want to provide them. Unless it's really attorney-client privilege documents. But if that's the case, why isn't he providing the same emails that went back and forth and records of the same discussions? They were not very complete. Explanation three, missing documents. So if it's explanation three, the communications do exist, but haven't been produced. And this is why Sunshine Law requires transparency. And this is why Sunshine Law exists. This is what it's for. This is for people like me to be able to go out and go, all right, I'm one of those people that doesn't trust government, because I don't. And I have reason not to, as do many others. I'm not alone. And so all I want to do is make sure that everything's on the up and up. That's it. I was in that hearing. I heard it. I have the transcript. I've quoted it. I've seen things on there. I remember the judge talking about, hey, you know, where does your discretion end? And the discussion between, you know, if I'm going 3 miles over the speed limit, you know, does that mean I have bad character? You know, does that your character argument? And the attorney general's office saying, oh, that's preposterous, judge. But you know, suppose a rape was going on in there, in a building, and an officer was there. Obviously, that's a, you know, different story. Well, yeah, but if it was, the police would be called. Somebody would say something. It's not up to an administrative licensing guy to, he should stop things if he can, you know, so should everybody else. I would, you know, if it was me, I might get sued for that because it ain't my authority to do it. But I tell you what, if I thought that's what was going on, I'd try to stop it. Badge or no. And so, you know, I have five basic questions that I think should be answered. You know, I think that these questions are important. So five basic questions. Who first proposed the legislative changes after the December 3rd hearing? Was it ATC or was it Benny Cook all on his own? And he's just sitting in his office and going, you know, I think ATC agents and fire marshals should have have arrest power. They don't need it. They've never needed it before, and it's not in their lane, I don't think. And that is why my article exists, the previous one, that says this is not in their lane. And it's an overreach of what they're doing right now. They become the investigator. They become the decider of what it is, because it's not arrest power. They don't need the arrest power. All they got to do, imagine what happens in reality, okay? You go into a liquor license establishment. I talked about this last week when we were going through the expansion of, or the requests to expand this power. They wanted to go in and take more power to arrest people. A licensing agent wants to arrest people. And yay, we get to arrest people. That's, or Benny's going to propose that we get to arrest people. Yay, says the ATC. You know, Jalen's working with us to working with Representative Cook to get it. And the DPS knew about it. I mean, I want to talk about this too, because this is nuts. After the hearing that happened on December the 3rd, one of the participants, the guy suing, wrote a letter to the governor and said, you know, you should be involved in this. Here's a copy. There were two letters, actually, to the governor. And after both of those, he received responses back saying, you know what? I'm going to refer this to the Department of Public Safety. His name is Mark James. He's the head of Department of Public Safety. He will contact you. He or someone from his staff will contact you. That's the governor saying that the head of ATC or someone on his behalf is going to reach out to you. No one has. And then after my first or second article, one of my articles, another letter was sent to the governor with that letter attached. And that one said, I've already said one time that Mark James, his office, someone will get a hold of you. I'm going to forward this to him as well, because he needs to know about this. And the whole time, DPS is working with ATC to get Betty Cook to give them more power to arrest people and do things. And the governor has told him to contact people, and he hasn't done it. Nothing. And it's well over a month, and probably longer. And I can pull the actual letter. I want to say it was February the 2nd that the second letter went to the governor's office. And the first one went sometime before that. And the Mark James hasn't contacted this guy at all, and neither has anyone on his behalf after the governor told him to. Instead, they've had, what we're going to do, and I don't know what went on, but these documents, we're going to post them. We're going to post the Sunshine Disclosures out there. They're public records, and put them out there for people to see or to question. But I'd like to speak with, I think Representative Cook is being used here. That's what I think. I think that's just as likely as not. Maybe used is a bad word, because these guys are allowed to advocate for legislation. They're allowed to do these things, you know, but transparency isn't a request. I mean, it's like required. Why aren't you going to tell us what's going on? Why can't we do this openly? I want to know, and I know many other people want to know, many bar owners want to know, why in the world you'd want to give a liquor license administrator the power to arrest you if he don't like you, if you piss him off, if he has the complete discretion to arrest you. What would happen if he arrested you and said, hey, you know what? I'm going to arrest you, but this will all go away if you just give up your liquor license. You won't be arrested. Now, that might sound, what did he call it, preposterous, as said counsel in front of Judge Stumpy on December the 3rd. Oh, a speeding ticket used as a basis to take away someone's liquor license because they have bad character. That's preposterous. But if he was a rapist, surely we'd take it. Well, I agree. You know, if a guy's a rapist, he shouldn't get a liquor license. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's the way I see it. So the purpose of these, you know, what I'm going to do next, I'm going to send more sunshine requests now. I have to, because the communications have to be clarified. The, you know, we have to reference these ATC records to Benny Cook specifically and go, well, what about these? We now have to expand it. We have to send it to the governor. We have to send another, see whether he's involved in this. We have to see whether or not Mark James or his office or his legislative liaison. Maybe Benny Cook thinks that ATC's counsel is his counsel. Is that what's happening? Or is this why records or communications between the two are closed? Those records are open unless they are with his own counsel. If it's somebody in the ATC, that's not his counsel. And I can't imagine that a judge would allow him to close those records just because he talked to any attorney. What? That's not how it works. And somebody could correct me. If you know, a judge may correct me. We shall see. But I don't think so. This is not the purpose of all of these records of 610 is transparency. And so government agencies routinely advocate for legislation. That's not unusual at all. Legislators routinely consider such requests. That's not unusual either. But those conversations are supposed to happen in the open. Missouri Sunshine Law exists to ensure that people like me can see that paper trail. Because when government operates in darkness, there's no accountability. Accountability's gone. And when the sunlight finally reaches the dark corners of bureaucracy where the bureaucrats hide, well, cockroaches tend to scurry, don't they? And I think that is critical to understand about this. So I believe, as after a result of this, I do intend to add the Missouri Department of Public Safety. Okay? I intend to add them. I intend to see about any ATC legislative communications. Now, the DPS website, this Jalen is listed as their legislative liaison. So, arguably, it's her job to talk to legislators and attempt to get them and to do things on their behalf. And I assume she's very well connected with Benny Cook, because that office, his office, he's on the, and one of the senior members, he's on the committee for public safety. And so I believe that there may be something that if it connects his counsel as well, then maybe that would be subject to being closed. But you don't just get to cite 610 as the basis for closing a record. You have to say, no, we can't give you records under 610 because they're closed because of a common law attorney-client privilege, or because statute, whatever it is, a different statute says we don't have to provide these sorts of documents. Let's say there was another statute that said we don't have to provide legislative discussions with outside agencies. I think that would be ridiculous if that were the case, but it's possible, I suppose. But he would have to then provide the statute and say why. So I have a different, expanded sunshine request that's going to go out to him later today. And I'm going to send another one to the Department of Public Safety. And and I'm also going to send one to the governor and to the ATC one more time. I wonder if they're going to appreciate this. or dislike it. I think they probably are getting tired of seeing us. That's a possibility. And it's unfortunate because we're still coming. And let's see. I'm going to request quite a few more documents, but I wanted to walk you through as well this timeline document, because I tell you what, let's get started with this hearing. The hearing occurred on December the 3rd, okay? Now, these bills, remember, in these bills, 2378, in 3154, one is public records verification and authority. And the one they were pulling was the arrest authority. I think they should pull the other one too. I think if this counts as public outcry, this is public outcry. Why in the world do you need to go after a peripheral owner? And we went into that last week in last week's show. And I'd be happy to speak more on that. Let's talk about the detailed timeline of what happened, okay? On December 11 of 2025, the House Bill 2378 was pre-filed. So there we were, and that's it's 8 days, but December 9th, there was pre-filing. This is where the ATC email says Jalen Talbot is working with Representative Cook to get language introduced on the House side, because they wanted to get arrest power, right? And for 2378. So 2378 was filed on December 11. And this was from the ATC internal email dated December 11. That remarks, we got the agent authority, yay, indicating knowledge of House Bill 2378 after the fiscal note request, right? And then on January 7, House Bill 2378 was read the first time. January 8, House Bill was read a second time. January 29, House Bill 2378 was referred to the crime and Public Safety Committee, which I believe he's the chairman of, Benny Cook, but he's the one who sponsored that bill, so they'd been in contact with him to get that done. The same day, House Bill 3154 was introduced and read the first time. February 2nd, it was read the second time. And between February 14 and February 16, ATC drafted its own 3154 comment memo, which we have. Oversight Division emails it to Cook and others on February 16. This was found in Cook's production. On February the 26th is when I emailed Cook and his committee with an article criticizing or questioning the efficacy of House Bill 2378 in the analysis of that, where I said, you know, ATC is calling themselves a police department. You're expanding their authority. They get it when they get, and you can go back and read that, right? So this, that was February the 26th. Okay. March the 2nd, House Journal, March the 2nd, lists the Crime and Public Safety Committee hearing schedule for March the 3rd. And under that schedule, it is noted House Bill 2378 removed. It was taken off of it. And in an ATC email that we received, it notes that Cook received, that this was an email, not Cook wasn't part of this email, but they say that according to the communication that we have, ATC email notes that Cook received quite a bit of backlash and they decided to pull the bill and might remove the ATC portion. And this is where the reference comes up to say it will be pulled the bill from committee and wait for things to die down. That means it's coming back. That means it's going to come back, and we need to keep track of this for sure. And so March the 5th, House Bill 3154 was referred to corrections and public institutions. March the 8th, oversight on fiscal note. March the 9th, ATC memo previously forwarded to Cook is presumably discussed, although the Sunshine Record doesn't show it. Let's see. And then, you know, here we are now, you know, with this, when I stopped to pick them up. And I collected both sets of, they were both emailed to me. I dropped off both checks to pick up the records, and then they emailed them to me. One was the 11th, and the other one was the 12th. And so we have the quotes that Jalen is working with Representative Cook to get this introduced. The agent authority, yay. The House Bill 2378 is removed. And Representative Cook received a lot of backlash, and we pulled the bill until things died down. What is going on? I wish to know. And it's hard for me to tell and hard for me to find out, because I don't believe that the Sunshine Laws are being as transparent as they ought to be. What documents are given in response to those should be quite a bit more transparent. Now, you could say that ATC has had quite a bit more practice at providing these records, because back in when these, prior to civic outlaws, some of these similar requests were being sent out to ATC. They provided thousands of pages of documents. They also provided the time frame, the 390,000, I think it was, the total bill is what it's going to cost, and the 44 years to provide the records, because they don't want to give us any more records. They don't wish to be transparent. There's no other reason for that, by the way. They could argue, oh, no, we just don't have the money. Well, you guys are in bed. Well, I shouldn't say that. You guys are connected to Representative Cook. Why don't you get him to give you more money if you need a staffer to make sure that your processes are open to the public? I think that they're using this as a means to not provide documents. That is what I believe. And I am not for that in any stretch of the imagination. And so we're going to continue in this regard. I have the article on today's topic basically drafted. I want to go over it one more time, and that will be released also today, as will increased and cumulative Sunshine requests to now. I want to ask a question of the governor's office, and I want to know, you know, if he could provide, I suppose it's possible that the governor's office never told Mark James' office to contact the litigant in the Cole County case to reach out and find out his point of view. There's been plenty of discussion between them and ATC regarding new legislation expanding the powers. You know, that has been provided with the staff liaison. So public records do confirm that House Bill 2378 and 3154 were introduced by Representative Cook, and they would expand the Alcohol Tobacco Control Police Authority, police activity, undercover surveillance authority, which they're already taking anyway, I think improperly. You know, what in the world... What in the world do you need to go in as a, oh, geez, I heard that something was going on here. Well, go get a warrant then. If you think it's a crime, go get a warrant. Nope, I don't have to. I'm only an administrator. Yeah, but if I can arrest somebody, doesn't that mean you need to, you need to, you know, Fourth Amendment kicks in, like I talked about last week? I believe it does. And I believe that people need to understand this. And I'm not sure that Benny Cook does, let alone the rest of the reps that he's asking to support this bill. Now, it's been removed. At least 2378 has been. I think 3154 needs to be removed too, because that is pointless, you know, or somebody, I suppose. There was another thing that I discovered, you know, I listened to another show, Shield Maidens of Missouri. It's on every Monday. And I was listening to it last week. And one of the things that kind of shocked me a little bit was in their discussion, and their focus is a little bit different. I appreciate what they do, and I enjoy listening to them. And I think that it's a good thing to have people like those two. And I wish I knew them. I don't believe I've ever met them. But I think the one who is in studio is Stacy Shore. And I didn't intend to talk about them today, but I wanted to bring this up at some point anyway, because what they are doing is extremely important. They go to hearings and they talk about these in the hearings. We're trying to take a better approach through sunshine laws, through information, through, we don't want to lobby for a bill or try to get new bills put in. We want to inform the public. You know, we wish to educate legislators, the public. I mean, somebody needs to let them know if they don't know, if they are stretching the roles of or merging the roles of public trust. You know, a legislative branch isn't supposed to work hand in hand with the executive branch department heads of whatever department that is. So these bills, even if they die or remain in committee, the internal emails have revealed very early coordination and a good deal of enthusiasm for the expansion of authority. I'm against that kind of thing. I don't like it. So the discrepancy between internal communication and the limited records produced in response to sunshine requests, especially in Representative Cook's office, suggests that there might be some undisclosed communications. Both me and other members of Civic Outlaws, we can credibly argue that these bills definitely reflect a pattern of government overreach, and the implementation of these bills, or the attempted implementation of these bills, you know, is non-transparency. But I believe that it would be a one step in the positive direction to acknowledge this bill's, or both bills', legislative fate and avoid, you know, I want to know where they are, whether they're going to be brought back after things die down. I hope they never do die down. I hope that people of sound mind and that do not like bureaucratic stealing of power or expansion of power. I shouldn't call it stealing. Hell, you got a willing person handing it over, because arguably, if the governor's staff are saying, "All right, here's the new bill. We're going to provide you this language. Rep, all you got to do is provide it. We'll go get it signed, and suddenly we'll have arrest power." How many years would it take? So the law goes into effect. August 28th, the usual day they go in effect. So this passes, it gets through the Senate, companion bill, whatever that one was, 1407 or something like that. And these two bills are get through their various committees, and they become a new statute signed by the governor. And then that would take effect August 28th. Now, I believe that last year, statute 536.140, which I discussed at length several weeks ago on Civic Outlaws, that law said that the judicial branch will interpret the law, will interpret what the statute means. Agency deference is dead. That article is out there. That podcast is out there. That Civic Outlaws episode is out there on civicoutlaws.com. Go there and check it out. civicoutlaws.com/podcast. And you can get that episode and listen to it, because that's critical. 536.140 is one of the, we are, I believe, the case that I happened to be in the courtroom for on December the 3rd is one of the, I believe, one of the first cases to interpret the new version of 536.140, which states that, and I'm not reading it verbatim, but it says that deference has to be interpreted by the, you know, they no longer defer to the agency interpretation. Courts don't do that. And the default is that all these statutes are interpreted in favor of maximizing individual liberty and curtailing bureaucratic overreach. Doesn't use the word bureaucratic overreach, but that's the nature of it. And we're one of the first, not we, I'm not involved, but this case that I happen to be sitting in the courtroom for is, I believe, one of the first that's going to interpret the new 536.140. I believe this is going to be a landmark case in the state of Missouri. But if you can do an end run around it by granting the same authority that was being complained of in that December the 3rd hearing, if you grant it to them, then, you know, what's the judge going to do? I already went through that too, the deference and all of those things. I believe that it is important that the judicial branch stay in its lane, that it interpret. How long will it take if these bad laws get passed and you get to court after August 28th? Let's say this all goes through. How many years will you sit on the docket fighting out this case, where you, or a case that complains of the constitutionality? Now, somebody could file suit against them after the bill is filed, and I think this one would be a good one for it, because it grants authority that is obvious. You know, where's your Fourth Amendment right? If you get the right to be on a present on a site for a licensing violation, and then you get to arrest somebody, you shouldn't have been there. Especially if, as is in many of the documents that were provided to us by Sunshine Requests from the ATC, they have a habit of investigating, going in, oh, without my badge. I had a safety guy in the parking lot, but I went in without my badge, didn't identify who I was. I just went in and began to investigate because he could received a complaint from somebody. He would have had to have a warrant to go in there under any normal criminal prosecution, but not so if all you're doing is licensing. You have the right to go in and verify somebody's licensing is up to par under the licensing standards. I believe this all to be critical and of grave importance, and I think that people should get interested. I think that people are interested. I think if you go out to our website at civicoutlaws.com, that we've spent some time revisiting those portals of where the podcasts are, especially, and that new page is civicoutlaws.com/podcast. And I like that document. You can get on there or like that webpage. It's very, very nice. And I think that we would love to see people join in with us. We've had conversations with quite a few legislators. We've had communications with bar owners, with the general public. We have a very active Facebook page. And our website is getting a lot of attention, and we're very glad of this result. And we're going to keep on looking. And this isn't our only issue. We have others being reviewed in the background right now. But we're going to keep this up. The goal is to have something substantial every Friday that continue our efforts into uncovering. shining the light on government darkness. That is the plan. And I plan to continue this effort. We need your support as well. We need your knowledge as well. And frankly, I invited Representative Cook to come and give his point of view. I'm not undesirous. I wouldn't not want to have him on the show. He could come on and explain his point of view. So could anyone from ATC. So could anyone from DPS. I'd invite him on to tell their side. I'll come out and interview. I'll come out and check it out. I'd be happy to come and have a discussion with you. Your office, mine, doesn't matter. And find out why I'm wrong. I'm not against it, but I don't believe I'm wrong. I believe these are vital issues that in the era of government overreach, that we really need to take an interest in this, friends and neighbors. I've already started doing a review of Freedom of Information Act because there are a couple of federal issues we wish to get involved with. We're very much interested in the prevalence of flock cameras. Oh, it was interesting when I was in Representative Cook's office the other day. I was second in line, and there was another gentleman in there who introduced himself to me. I don't recall his name, but he's a very nice man. And he was there and said that he was also uncovering some issues. Had to do with traffic cameras, speeding cameras. And I've been against speeding cameras forever, so we had a really good discussion on that. When I did practice law years ago, I used to take those cases for free if somebody got a traffic ticket through a speeding camera, because who's the witness? Who is the witness? And how do you get that witness to come and testify? You don't have a witness. You have a video of something that is recorded and put in on a server in, I don't know, Arizona, you know, so this server holds all these videos, and then every once in a while, they'll automatically flag a violation. Well, who the hell witnessed it? Nobody. There isn't anybody. You're not monitoring a camera. You are having an automated system. Now, I talked about this once or twice before because I lived in Qatar for a year, and there's a prince, and they have traffic light cameras everywhere. And one day, I got at my office, a ticket for going through a red light camera. It was from I rented a car for the year that I was there. And their car rental company said, "Hey, you got to pay this ticket. You got a ticket." And I was like, "Well, who saw me?" "Oh, they have traffic cameras here." "Yeah, well, that's one you don't fight. You know why? They have a prince." They don't have the same constitution that we have. There, the prince decides he's putting up cameras. Guess what? There you go. But our mayors are not princes. They don't get to do that. And on that note, friends and neighbors, I'm very glad you joined me on Civic Outlaws this morning. I hope you enjoyed the show. I hope you continue to tune in to our shows and join our efforts. And I very much enjoy this portion of what we are doing. And I hope that you continue to follow us, that you support our efforts, and that you join in if at all possible. I thank you very much and hope you have a very nice day.